Namaste, good morning. I'd like to start by reading a quotation of Ramesh Ji. I think this is one of the first books which is no longer available, unfortunately. It's called Gentle Hammer, Friendly Sword, Silent Arrow. Gentle hammer, friendly sword, silent arrow. And you see, what really endeared me to his teachings was that they were so practical. Even lofty concepts like enlightenment and self-realization were brought down to daily living. And this is one of my favorite quotations, actually. Truly, these are words to live by. Spiritual awakening means that the nightmares and pleasures of the living dream called life don't really matter anymore. And therefore, if you are feeling after being drawn to this teaching that nothing really matters as much as it used to, your opinions, your views, your judgments, as well as others, for example. You get this feeling of transience, here today, gone tomorrow. And so there's really nothing much to hold on to in terms of a position. Then truly, whatever happens loses its grip on you. By loses its grip on you is meant that it loses its grip on the me, which earlier used to cherish the happening and make a monument out of it. This happened to me. Accept the experience of the moment and let it die with the moment. The secret of life is to understand that the past must be abandoned, that the unknown cannot be avoided, and that nothing in the world can be definitely known and fixed. So here is actually another pointer. How much are we referring to our past experience always? Do you keep narrating stories from the past? Oh, I had such a hard upbringing. This happened to me, that happened to me. Do you keep reviving stories of what happened to me in the past is a pointer to how much one is still in the grip of me. As Siddharameshwar Maharaj said, Maya is me. And likewise, castles in the air, imaginary scenarios, stories without any real foundation, all what could be scenarios. What would be if and when, if and when. And while it is perhaps natural to avoid the unknown because we don't know what it will bring. And our fear is that it will bring us pain. So we wish to avoid the unknown because that avoidance is based on the memory of the past. Something bad happened to me, therefore it could happen to me again, which is very fair. The rationale is very fair. If we all have experiences in our younger days which threaten our survival, I too had that, then it is but natural that one fears the future, one fears the unknown. But when we truly see that this is actually the fear of death, I am afraid to die. That is why I am afraid of the unknown. That is why I am afraid of the future. It is the fear of death of the me and my story. It is not just the fear of death, because in deep sleep I am dead, so to speak, to the world. I am absent. So if me and my story and this constant referencing to this me is dropped through grace and understanding, or rather through understanding that comes through grace, then one is more open to what is and what would be. Because the burden and baggage of memory and this wish to survive, this wish to pick up the sword and battle and so on, that is seen for what it truly is. And can you imagine? Okay, all right, in one's 20s, in one's 30s, when one is still accumulating experiences of life, all this goes on. But imagine in one's 50s, in one's 60s, when a large part of life is already behind one, and yet one is gripped by this fear of the unknown, of what will happen to me, what will happen to me and my story. And that is why the wisdom teachings descend upon us. So we wake up from this dreamlike conceptual thinking, imagining, picturing, fearing. And when there is none of that dreamlike quality operating, one is simply present to what is. Here is a simple experiment you can try. If you have someone in your life, maybe a family member, a friend, a colleague, whatever it be, whom you are always having arguments, battles, clashes with. Now let's say another situation presents itself and you are fully available to what is, just simply present. The understanding has dawned that the person in front of you is playing out their script based on their genetics, their conditioning, whatever you may call it, their programming. And you are simply being present to what is. Now, even that the ego does not like. The ego of the other starts wondering, how is this possible? and then starts imagining and projecting onto the other, the one who is in presence, you will find that the person in front of you starts accusing you of things. I know what's going on in your mind. I know what's truly in your heart. Why are you keeping quiet? Why aren't you speaking? You see, that is how the ego gets exposed, because it is coming from this ammunition-filled storehouse of conditioning and its own opinions, views, judgments, and it loves thrusting it onto others, thinking that the others are separate from it. You see, the fact is, if I get antagonized by someone in my life, that feeling is still appearing within me only. It may appear that the other is responsible for it, but that feeling of being antagonized is mine, so to speak. Something is being triggered within. So presence is like a fire which burns, you see. And the ego is completely scared of it. And therefore what it does, it tries to revolt against the fire of presence. Because it is afraid that it can be burnt and turned to ash. And so it can come out raging. This teaching is the cremation of the sense of doership, which we ascribe to others and to ourselves. It is the funeral of stories based on doership. He did this to me, she did this to me, I did that to him, etc., etc., etc. And then one is left standing on an open, vacant field, which is the field of being. We'll take some questions which have come in. I have a question and I hope that maybe you can help me find the answer. I understand that there is no doer. I understand that everything is only God's doing. What troubles me is, why should one pray at all? What is the use of it for us or for God? Doesn't it strengthen the ego with the belief that one can make something happen by appealing to God? I really hope it will be possible for you to answer me. And the last line, English isn't my native language, so it might be possible that I misspelled or misused some words. You see, that is the humility. Now, the subject of prayer has been touched upon quite often in the talks and the teaching. You see, the main point, such a valid question here for someone who has now been exposed to this teaching. Because the question is quite simple, really. What it means is, if God is omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, all-embracing, all-powerful, all-loving, all-being, all-action, and there's nothing which is not God, wouldn't God know everything? Wouldn't God even know what my thoughts are, what my wants are, what my wishes are, what my prayers are, and so on? So therefore, isn't it an act of futility to even pray as an act to God, which is absolutely correct? Yet, a spontaneous prayer can arise. For example, you see someone unwell and this thought just arises. I wish he or she gets well soon. A prayer of gratitude can arise. Anything that arises spontaneously is natural, a natural prayer. But as Rameshji would say, and he wouldn't mince his words, most of our praying is a form of begging. Lord, give this to me, this relationship to me, this material object to me, 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 me. You see, that is the problem. That is what happens. So, what is a prayer which is me-centric? And what is a spontaneous prayer? So one would find that if one accepts consciousness is all there is, everything is God's will, not my will, O Lord, but thine be done, the kind of praying changes, transforms actually. You stop wishing for personal relationships, whether it is people, objects, etc., because you know in any case, you don't know what's truly good for you. What may be good today may not turn out to be so tomorrow. So you start trusting the flow of life, the process, the natural process of life. You start trusting it more and more and interfering in it less and less. And that is true praying. My daughter is suffering from an ailment as we did not get timely advice from the concerned doctors. I feel guilty for not pursuing the matter in time when I had my doubts. I feel I should not have listened to the doctors and should have switched to some other doctor. It is not easy to express, but the present situation is such that my daughter's disease has aggravated and I feel guilty, depressed, and tensed about it. Every day, I had been cursing those doctors. Finally, I came to know that one of the doctor's wives expired in COVID and his kids are suffering the loss. My attitude was such that now he would know how it feels when one's child suffers. And I don't feel guilty about it. I feel that at least now he knows what I am going through each and every day of my life. Looking at my young daughter and fearing for her future. My question is, how to be at peace with myself in such a situation where I worry for my daughter's health each and every day, not knowing what the future holds. You see, that is not really the question, although it may appear to be. So we have to trace this very important question which has been asked, and the person has been very honest in expressing what they truly feel, which is most appreciated. Many times we are not honest with others as well as with ourselves, because we don't know how the other will react. So this is something very tangible, something very real. So let's explore this together, all of us. We will truly go through this line by line and see what understandings can be gleaned from this. My daughter is suffering from an ailment as we did not get timely advice from the concerned doctors. You see, this is the first point. The daughter is suffering an ailment because it was the will of God. It was meant to happen, and so to assume that because one did not get timely advice means there's another force, another power which could have prevented this. This is very important to understand, and as Joel Goldsmith says, we human beings have to give up this belief in two powers. If something is meant to happen, it will happen. Through whom it happens is quite irrelevant. Ramana Maharshi has said this, Rameshji has reiterated this. If everyone is an instrument through whom the source functions, let us look at what is. An ailment has arisen. The blame is immediately placed on doctors. This part, truly, I cannot understand, because we don't know whether the ailment started before the doctors were brought into the picture or after. So that is unknown to us. So if we just look at these statements with objectivity, without taking sides or saying this one is right, that one is wrong, because there is no right or wrong here. We are just looking at it in the light of objective understanding. I feel guilty for not pursuing the matter in time. Again, the ego feels, oh, I could have controlled this situation. Because I did not, things went haywire. You see how important the ego feels it is that it can manipulate the entire scenario based on control and power and dominion to bring about the best outcome. And now that the best outcome has not happened, I feel guilty because I did or did not do something. I feel I should have listened to the doctors. You see the word should? I feel I should not have listened to the doctors and should have switched to some other doctors. Then why didn't you? Simply because at that time, it was not in your control. Events were happening. Decisions were being made. So this dialogue of should have, should not have, that's okay in terms of speaking, that when you reflect on something and you say, all right, I should have not. But if you are actually fixated on this point of should have and should not have, that is where the suffering lies. I feel I should not have listened to the doctors. Now, I mean, does one not normally listen to doctors? They obviously know better than us. So this is the thinking mind of the ego, which is trying to find a way out of what is. I should have switched to some other doctors, and it's not easy to express. The present situation is such that my daughter's disease has aggravated. That is truly the situation. And therefore, all that one can do in this present scenario, keeping aside all the should haves, should not haves, would have, could not have, could be, should have been, would have been, that is what is presented to one here and now. But as we go on, we see that that is also now not brushed aside. That is not fair to say, but it has got covered by all this unnecessary condemnation, blame, hatred, malice, and so on and so forth. So the present situation is such that my daughter's disease has aggravated, and I feel guilty. I feel depressed. tensed about it. But what about the daughter? What about what she is going through here and now? What is the best course of action I feel that has to be followed? Do I have to go to another set of doctors? What can be done, etc., etc., etc.? I feel guilty. I feel depressed because I feel I could have avoided this situation. You couldn't. If you could have, you would have. So why take the burden of this entire happening on your shoulders? There is a divine will in operation. Many times we cannot comprehend the way it works. But that is the same will which is allowing us to breathe, pumping the blood through our system, allowing us to sit on this earth, enables us to listen and to speak and to see and so on and so forth. So we need to give that will some room to operate, which in any case it will. But this grip of control has to be looked at. Every day I have been cursing those doctors. Finally, I came to know that one of the doctor's wives expired in COVID and his kids are suffering the loss. My attitude was such that now he would know how it feels when one's child suffers. Perhaps, perhaps not. You see, how do you know? It is all an assumption. And why not be concerned with our own story? Now, his child is not suffering an ailment like your child is. They're very different scenarios. But as long as some form of suffering is inflicted, by whom? Clearly, in this case, by the divine, because the wife died of COVID. But I am very happy because now he knows. Now his children are suffering the loss of their mother. Your child is not suffering the loss of a mother. She's suffering an illness. That is another scenario. But as long as suffering is there, you're happy. Because you've blamed somebody else for happening. And you see, if you are truly convinced that the doctors gave the wrong line of treatment, which is possible, we don't know, then necessary action could have been taken by you. So we are not trying to remove the pain which the mother is feeling at her child's illness. Please don't get me wrong. We are just trying to see this entire game of projection that if this had not happened, that had not, therefore I blame this one. Now I'm so glad that one is suffering and so on. You see, the mind, it becomes this monster when it is mired in this game of doership. And what is the painful situation without this entire story now being carried as baggage, like Achilles carried Hector behind his chariot round and round? Is I am no longer available for the present situation, which is my daughter, her current health, if I can do something about it, if not, and how to deal with what is, and drop all this dead weight. Every day of my life, I feel now that at least he knows what I am going through each and every day of my life. Looking at my young daughter and fearing for her future. My question is how to be at peace with myself in such a situation where I worry for my daughter's health each and every day. It is a very challenging situation. It is very difficult to be at peace with it. The only peace is knowing that it is God's will. This knowing will not take away the pain of the mother. We have no magic formula here. This is called life and living. We have all had challenges, losses, pains, grieving in different forms of our life. And most certainly, a parent seeing a child suffering is one of the most intense forms. But the difference is to accept the will of God and then do what one can do in the given situation, and let the pain in the moment arise at the helplessness and honor that for what it is. But divest oneself of the story. This would not have happened. This should not have happened. This could not have happened. And you find that even if the thought arises that perhaps, maybe if I was more diligent, maybe if I had taken a second opinion, whatever, it's a passing thought. You're now no longer hooked on to what could have been. Sometimes, many times, many of us have a destiny of more suffering, more pain than pleasure. Lucky are those who have more pleasure than pain. And we have to live through it. Our challenges, our concerns, health, financial, whatever it be. But what this teaching helps in is the words we have used in this letter: guilt, should have, would have. These evaporate, you see. And we are left with the light of what is. Next question. We have a small family concern which I am heading here in Goa, which is going through troubled times. Big losses for the last 5 years in spite of putting in great hard work. We are trying to sell the company now. I am going through very great tension presently and have taken blame and shame on me for the company's debacle. I have been following Rameshji's teachings and also Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi's teachings. My father was originally from Thiruvannamalai. I am seeing that all my relatives and contemporaries are doing really well, and me and my family are in the dumps. I have formed an opinion that I am not the doer, and whatever has happened in my life and is going to happen is the will of God, and I take solace in the same. But please advise in these troubled times. You see, this is again precisely what we have been saying all this time. In spite of putting great hard work, the results are not in our control. This, the whole Bhagavad Gita is on this. Yet, if we are meant to put in that hard work, we will put in the hard work. If it is not our destiny to reap the rewards of that hard work, so be it. Yes, it can be frustrating because we find this direct connection between effort and reward. You see, I had in school a friend whose family was wealthy, and after school also he didn't do much work at all, and kept spending money and going to fancy restaurants. And I remember when I was 18 or 19, I would really wonder, is God so unfair? that here I'm slogging and working hard and, you know, each rupee counts, and there this guy is living the life of a king. Or rather, appears to be, because we don't know what crosses the other people are carrying, you see. And so, if one is immersed in these teachings, it is very clear that there is no direct effort-reward relationship anymore. Yet, you do all that you think and feel you should do. You work as hard as you possibly can because you have to earn money, but whether you get it or not is God's will. So all this comparing and judging, you see, others are doing so well, my relatives are doing so well, there is no room for that anymore. It may be an observation, but trying to rationalize this, that if others are doing well, why am I not doing well? You can investigate. You may get an answer, you may not. You may get an answer which makes sense, and then you change your way of working or something you are doing, the business you are in, I don't know. Yet, you may realize I've done all that I possibly could in the best possible way. It's not happened. It's not happened. Be okay with it, which does not mean your pain will go away. The fact that you are working very hard, not getting the results, life has been hard, it is painful. Obviously, welcome to life and living. But this thing, others are doing very well, why am I not doing well? This questioning God's will, you see, that starts dropping away. There is no room for that anymore with this teaching. And truly, if the teaching went deep down, you would rejoice at the other's success. You would feel happy for them, knowing that no matter how much hard work they put in, they were successful because they were meant to be successful. There's a poem someone shared with me, which I'd read out. After this, we can take questions or if anyone would like to share anything. My ego crawled into my arms and said, I cannot do it anymore. I have been frightened and away from home for far too long. I do no longer wish to go on with the struggle, and I am weary now, so tired, right down to the bone. I cradled her with such a tender love and felt her anxious form fall soft. My darling child, I said and sighed, you've found your home right here, right now. It's time to rest your weary head and know there's nothing more you need to do. From here on forth, all will be done. When you know that you are not truly living your life, but you are being lived by the source, then you start allowing it to do its job. And the person who wrote this poem says, can the inner struggle of letting be and holding on lead to exhaustion? Most certainly. It is the ego that is exhausted, you see. It is the ego that is trying to let go, trying to hold on. And when the ego realizes that all this effort of letting go, holding on all the time, it's tired of it now. It's realized I no longer can hold on so tightly to things. I'm exhausted. Then It says, okay, now let me lay down my sword. Let me withdraw all opposition, to use Joel Goldsmith's words, and let the Lord take over. All right. Yes, Holger.
Namaste, Gautam.
Namaste.
Beautiful to be here. All right, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, something happened. I don't know.
Something happened.
Amazing to be here. Today I was driving and I could see that the invisible and the appearances, they were there at the same time. I don't know how to explain this, but it was an amazing, it was a very interesting experience. Just that the nothing and the everything are there at the same time.
Yes.
And this was just, I cannot describe it. And it's just this gratitude. And when I looked into your eyes earlier, something released in my own eyes was very interesting, some tension or something. There was some flickering. But whatever comes, goes. I'm not hunting for experiences, but it's just overall, I'm just grateful for the teaching and for satsangs and for friends who speak this language of non-duality. And it's a wonderful gift.
Thank you. And you know, Holger, actually, when we really see, like you expressed, you see, you had a sense of the visible and invisible in your case. But when we kind of start sensing that whatever appears is like just pictures in consciousness coming at us, you know, even that from the invisible, because we didn't see them earlier. So they just come from somewhere. And it's really, truly quite magical when that happens, because it's just the space is created between what is seen and the seer. It's like, you know, like Maharaj would say, the wedge between being and experiencing. And it's got a very light quality to it when that happens. It's not so heavy anymore. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Jagjot.
Hello, Gautam.
Hello.
First of all, sorry about this lying down position. I have a condition because of which I have to be in this position.
No problem.
So, concept of the ego and how it plays out, the stories, it took me quite a long time to understand this. And Bita, please, 1 second. And it was Ramesh Ji's books which actually helped me understand that what is this going, because reading about non-duality and experiencing the empty awareness in meditation, I was just trying to grasp that, get hold of that thing over and over again. So it was my ego which just wanted to hold on to a particular state, and which actually was leading me to the same trap, which we all fall into over and over again. And now that I realize that I don't have to take that burden, so I allow whatever, you know, whatever comes up, whatever happens. And it is such a relief. It is such a relief. And those who say that Ramesh Ji was gentle, actually not. He was as ruthless as Maharaj was. Yes. But it's that he did it in a very subtle manner. Like he just did it. But my ego took a damn good beating when I listened to his lectures. So it was really, so my gratitude to you, listening to you. Thank you so much. And I just, when I see you, I know I get Ramesh Ji's image in my head. I don't know why. I've never met him. I just saw his video a couple of days back only, a couple of months back, I would say. But I don't know. I see that connection.
Yeah. Thank you, Jagjot. And, you know, the word relieved, actually is a key word. I feel in this entire teaching, and therefore in one's life, this word relief and relieved is underestimated. Because when one starts living life through this, the prism of these teachings, it is a deep, deep sense of being relieved of a very big burden one has been carrying, which was not one's fault. It was what one could call divine hypnosis or the maya of conditioning, which we were not responsible for, which just happened to us. And when that baggage of doership is kept aside, this is the only word which comes up, relieved, you know. And it reminds me of, I've mentioned this before, Dennis the Menace comic strip, where he comes back home from school with this heavy bag. And his mother asks him, how was school? And his reply was, I'm so glad it's over that I'm almost happy I went. You see?
Right.
So that relief, it really gives a sense of true happiness. That is what happens.
Very true. Very
true. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, Shiva.
Hi, sir. How are you?
Good, good.
Okay. So actually, I just wanted to share something with you. So about 3-4 years back, I was just out of, I was working for a very big concern. So I was a diabetologist over there. And then they had to shut down the center. And then I had started my own diabetic center in Chennai. But I wasn't doing much work and I was not too happy about it. So there were a few people who came from northeastern part of India. And they said that they needed my you know, presence over there and they wanted my work over there. So, but people around me really discouraged me, telling that, you know, it's not very safe to go and, you know, work in such place because your security will not be, you know, you will not be secure enough to work in such a place. So a lot of people discouraged me. So I was very confused about what might happen if I go and work in such a place. But that was only to work for once in a month, go there, meet all the people, make sure they benefit out of whatever I've learned by God's blessing. So one day I just stood at my guru's feet and I was begging him, like you said, I was asking him, should I go or not? Should I go or not? Is it safe for me to go or not? People are discouraging me. And I make tea for him every Thursday. And that day the milk got spoiled. The total tea was spoiled. So I order on one of these, you know, online food delivery services. And I went to the, I wanted to go to Assam. So to help out people over there. And suddenly, at the last moment, the delivery partner calls me and says, the masala tea that you had ordered is not available. And please talk to the people over here. So I speak to the people and they say, we're sorry, sir, the masala tea is not available. And I said, what tea is available? They said, Assam tea is available. You want to take it? So for a moment, I did not realize. I said, okay, fine. You give me the Assam tea. Then only I realized, okay, probably it was his approval that you go and serve in that place. And when I reached there and the flight, suddenly there were visions. I was closing and I was meditating. There were visions of my guru. I've never seen my guru's photo in Gauhati at all. But when I entered the cab, I saw his photo in the cab. And I said, do you have a temple of my guru over here? He said, yes. And I was taken there. And then from then on, I've been going there for the last 3 years. I've never seen his photo. Now, I'm just asking, should I go and... I was not very confident whether I should go there or not. So I went and I started pestering my guru. So whenever, you know, decisions like that come, when people around you, you know, have a different opinion, should I go trouble him for all this? Should I trouble him for him to... you know, show that I give you my approval, I'm there for you. Every time should I go and ask him such things and pester him for such things? So what do I do?
You see, Shiva, that is actually, it all depends on your relationship with your guru. If that is the relationship, then by all means. Now with Ramesh, it was completely 180 degrees opposite. When I would go to him when I was about 28, 29, when I started seeing him, I was 29, I think. And I would ask him about a situation at work. His only answer was, we'll see what happens. He would not say, do this or don't do that. He would say, do what you think and feel you should do. The results are not in your control. And then my first impression was, this guy is useless. Yeah, I can't go asking him for anything. But then I saw that the guru was not a crutch. I was not really looking anymore for a guru to take decisions on my behalf. Here I had a guru who was telling me, look, whatever is destined to happen will happen. All you can do is take a decision. The decision is truly not yours because it is based on your genetics and your conditioning. So therefore, whatever happens based on your decision is not your decision. And therefore, the results are not your results. Whatever happens as a consequence of those decisions is meant to happen. So what happened, Shiva, is this protective coat the me was wearing, am I taking the right decision? Am I taking the wrong? What will happen to me? All that fell off. It was like literally this garment was removed, which protects me from what is, this fear of what is it right or wrong? That is what my guru did, you see. And so this need to ask others, what should I do? And to think and ponder, that started reducing. By all means, those who had more experience than me, I valued their opinions. But my decision was not based on what they said. I factored it in, and ultimately I had to decide for myself. So I did not leave it to the others to decide for me, you see. And if one has this kind of trust in life, this knowing, you see, that the presence of God, of consciousness, is not a threatening presence. It is an all-embracing presence. Sometimes things may go my way, sometimes they may not go my way, as has been my life story so far. You know, but to trust that presence, to allow it, rather than always be on guard that, you know, I may take the wrong decision, I better ask 10 people around me. You see, that is what starts changing. That is when the defenses of the me start dropping away. And now this is something you have to ask yourself, because there are some relationships, some teacher-disciple relationships, where the teacher, the master is asked all the time, should I do this, should I do that? So this is not a judgment against those kind of relationships. But with this teaching of Advaita, non-duality, whatever you may call it, this is showing you that you will be meant to be precisely where you are, whether you like it or not, whether who takes the decision or not is irrelevant. Whether you take it, 10 others take it is irrelevant. And so this teaching ultimately says, whether it is the others, it is the 10 others, the guru, the disciple, everyone is an aspect of consciousness. And whatever happens is the will of that consciousness. So there are two scenarios here. One is if Shiva is comfortable in a relationship where he needs to constantly ask his teacher for the right direction in life, then one stays with that because that's what works for you. But if you find that you are drawn to this other way of living and being, this does not mean you won't inform your teacher. You may say that, you know, this is what I feel like doing. This is the conclusion I have reached, and see what the teacher says. But that need to keep going and wanting someone else to make the decision for one may drop away, you know. And perhaps your teacher would then be even more happy that, okay, Shiva is now, you know, taking his decisions and keeping me informed about it. So even that is a very nice relationship to have. So what you have asked is actually a It's a personal question in the sense that it varies from person to person and their relationship with their teacher.
Thank you, Mr. Gautam. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes, Shabnam.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, I can.
Namaste.
Namaste.
And thank you. I don't know how I'm here today, in the sense, on the screen, we watch you on YouTube otherwise. And it's only because I thought I have a question, so, you know, kind of I appeared like this. And for a long time, actually, you know, you had brought in this subject on prayer, but I think it wasn't touched. Today, I just came in like this, and I wanted to talk about prayer. And I reached you through, again, my guru, you know, from, you know, I mean, I have mentioned that I had listened to the channel where Sai Baba devotee speaks. I mean, that's how I got connected to you. And then I got connected to Rameshji. So it happened that way. And the last year, I mean, since the COVID started, it has been extremely, extremely helpful. The word relieved was very important here because, you know, nothing is really in our hand. Though many times I would get into discussions of what is happening and, you know, the COVID and the vaccine and a whole lot of things that come with it. However, I mean, I kind of keep a check and I say, you know, like how Baba says that he is the, you know, he is the ultimate puller. He's the one who's ultimately rather the God or consciousness, whatever one may say here. He's the one who decides everything. And like, again, the non-doership comes in. However, you've answered most of my questions already, you know, through even the previous questions that were put up by Shiva. And one question which may be relevant, I'm not sure. In Baba's teachings, you know, in Sai Satcharitra, firstly, like, you know, one follows the prayan where you say that I complete the prayan, therefore my prayers are answered. There is a prayan for others as well who are going through very, you know, tough situations in life. So everybody kind of does the prayan together. So it's like a, you know, collective prayer. And again, the very thing that you said that he knows, like somebody asked the question, he knows what's going on. He knows what's on my mind. Why should I pray? Why should I ask? Again, the question of whether we are praying as we are begging or, you know, we are just praying for his presence. Now, coming to the relevant question, I have the book in front of me also, which I wanted to ask you. In chapter, I think it's chapter 5, where Baba was very much attached to two brothers, Bala Sahib Dengli and Nana Sahib Dengli. Now, one of the brothers didn't have a child, you know, he didn't have a child for a very long time. And his elder brother told him, why don't you go and ask Baba? I mean, and Baba would visit their house also. So he said, Baba knows, he knows that, I mean, this is my problem. So he says, no, you go to Shirdi, you ask him over there that, you know, this is what you want. And therefore, you know, your prayer shall get answered. So,
sorry, I can't hear you anymore. I don't know why you've gone on mute.
1 second.
Yeah.
Sure. Better?
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, my question is again on the same chapter where, you know, he was coerced to go to Baba and ask for what he wanted. Now, yeah, that's where the two things happen, that, you know, he knows what's in my mind, one, and two, the happenings happen also. Now, that particular moment where I put in that, you know, take that step and say, Baba, I want this from you. Now, that's where the question is. And I wanted to ask this question for a long time. And I'm so happy, I don't know, again, the happening, rather, that it happened to be this meeting where you're addressing the concept of prayer.
Yeah, so you have to thank that young girl who asked that question with her head out first. See how related you are to her. If she didn't ask it, this would not have happened.
Yes.
You see, it's very simple. Firstly, since you mentioned the Sai Satcharita, there are innumerable stories. In fact, I forget the name of his very famous devotee, Megha, who, when he was told about Sai Baba, said, "I refuse to go and see that Muslim fakir. I have no interest. I'm a Hindu Brahmin," or whatever it is. You know, I don't know the details. And so yet when his employer forced him to go there and he stepped into Baba's space, Baba immediately threw him out and said, "How dare you step in here? You've been abusing me even before you came." So obviously Baba knew it. All knowing, all pervading. Like we say, is there a need for praying to someone when it's all pervading, all knowing, and already knows your prayer? Yet in the second instance of this man who wanted a child, it is his brother who forced him to go. A happening happened. In his case, it worked differently. That although he says that Baba knows what's the point of going, someone tells him and he considers agreeing to that advice and going. So he does precisely that which he thinks and feels he should do. So again, like I said, there's no right or wrong. If you feel like praying, by all means pray. But know this, that the prayer, if it is a genuine prayer, you will find that it is a spontaneous prayer, and there's very little of me and my identification which is attached to that prayer. You will truly find this. So what will happen is, whatever you pray for, you might notice that you are praying differently for different things, or the same thing in a different way, without this feeling that my praying is going to bring about an outcome from God, in this case, Sai Baba. So this teaching will not say pray or don't pray, but it exposes the word prayer for what it is. Now, for example, let's say my prayer is for self-realization. Now, obviously, consciousness, all-knowing, all-pervading, omnipresent, knows what I am truly feeling, and there's no necessity. But that yearning might be so strong that this really arises, that Lord, I do pray for self-realization. Nothing wrong in that. But I know that I have to leave it with God. If this yearning becomes something which starts making me contract, obsessive, like my effort, my this, my that, and I start shrinking rather than expanding, then I know that that quality of prayer is very me-centric, because it feels that all depends on me. But when I surrender in prayer, that Lord, this is truly my wish, my yearning, you already know it, yet I'm expressing myself because that is what is happening, that prayer is a light prayer. It is a freeing prayer. It is an open prayer. That is what happens. I can't hear you.
Thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. I mean, quite a lot of it got answered. Many questions get answered when we listen.
That's what happens, really, truly. You know, that's the beauty of satsang, because everyone's questions apply to all of us. And that is why when people would ask Rameshji for personal private appointments, he would say, "I really request you to come to the satsang so that everyone can benefit from your questions."
Correct.
So thank you. Thank you, Shabnam.
Thank you.
Yes, we'll take this one last question. Vasundhara.
Namaste, Gautam.
Namaste, Vasundhara.
I want to express my gratitude. Feel very happy, peaceful listening to you.
Thank you.
I love that I've taken it as a sort of practice to remain silent in impersonal awareness, what you have told. That I feel is more peaceful, because at times mind feels everything is simple, but at times it's full of panic attacks. Mm. So I feel just to be to myself, or just sit to myself and listen to satsang, like that is the pastime, like how I pass my time, my favorite.
Nice way to pass the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'll just change the view so I can see all of y'all. Nice way to pass the time. This is the burden of time, isn't it? And in deep sleep, this question of passing time does not arise, because we do not exist as an ego with a sense of doership in deep sleep. There is no real thing as passing time. What is actually happening is our beingness is passing. Because as of now, it's dependent on this body that was born and the body that will die. The beingness here today, gone tomorrow. Now imagine the same force which not only holds all the planets in their place, but makes them revolve around the sun at a particular speed, rotate around their axis at a particular speed, with all such tremendous precision. That same force is operating right here, right now. Could anything be imperfect right here, right now? It may appear to be. Could it really be? Could it really be? And therefore, all your imperfections are perfectly placed. All others' imperfections are perfectly placed. All that appears to be imperfect in your life is perfectly placed. But you don't like it. Even that is perfectly placed. You see, that is why Rameshji said this is a cosmic joke. The movie directed by consciousness, produced by consciousness, each actor in the movie, the role is played by consciousness. The screen is consciousness. The one viewing this movie is consciousness. And the movie is already in the can. Now it is being viewed. That's what's happening. And we cry and we laugh. And then when it is all over, the screen still remains. And we walk out of the cinema hall onto the next happening.